We must talk.
Oh, my God.
God? God is love. I don't love you.
I can't do this.
I can lay you out and fill your mouth with your mother's feces. Or we can talk.
Them? Are you an angel?
I am the first angel, loved once above all others. A perfect love. But like all true love, one day it withered on the vine. Ah, the winged party boy is about. Come to feed on the guts of your little Mary.
Are you a part of it?
No, Catherine. Other angels have made this war because they hate you. You and all humans. God has put you in his grace and pushed them aside. They're desperate. They've never been able to conquer the other loyal angels. And so this war has remained in stalemate for thousands of years. And while this state of affairs endures, no soul can meet its God. Your parents and their parents and so on from the beginning lie still in wormy earth. Of course, some of them do come to me eventually. For while heaven may be closed, I am always open, even on Christmas. Gabriel has a plan. Humans, and how I love you talking monkeys for this, know more about war and treachery of the spirit than any angel. Gabriel is well aware of this and has found a way to steal the blackest soul on earth to fight for him. If he wins, heaven opens. I know that this new heaven will just be another hell. You see, I'm not here to help you and the little bitch because I love you or because I care for you, but because two hells is one hell too many. And I can't have that. What I'm offering you is a chance not only to save Mary, but to finally open heaven to your kind. What do you say?
Radio Drone.
Welcome to our late Christmas episode of Radio Drome. I am Josh Hadley. With me, as always, is the Cecil himself.
Ho, ho, ho.
Hey, it's after Christmas. Don't be doing that crap.
It's not Orthodox Christian Serbian Christmas yet, so this can still count. I haven't actually celebrated Christmas yet.
So technically, we're not late to Peter because we're actually doing this episode late because of Peter?
Oh, it's because of my computer, you ass.
I know. I explained it how Windows 10 update killed you.
Yeah, it did. And I've had to reset my laptop a number of times.
Well, if you guys want a little bit of computer protection, you could go to NordVPN. What you do is you go to the website 1201beyond.com/DromeVPN. And if you do that, it'll take you to Nord's site, where for only $3.79 a month, you can get Nord's protection for a 3-year plan. That's 75% off of a 3-year plan. They'll encode your data. They'll protect you online. You can get around region coding. You basically need a VPN, a virtual private network nowadays. So go to 1201beyond.com/DromeVPN. And then there's also AdamandEve.com. You know, ring in the new year, something up your butt. Go to adamandeve.com, use the promo code DROME, D-R-O-M-E, and you will get 50% off of a single item, 3 free DVDs, a sex swing, and free U.S. shipping. All you have to do is use the promo code DROME at adamandeve.com. I wanted to do a religious franchise, because religion ties in with Christmas. This was meant to be our Christmas episode, so we're going to look at the Prophecy franchise. It's a religious franchise, so before getting into any of the individual movies or the backstories or all the nonsense that we went into, what are your thoughts on the 5-film Prophecy franchise, which most people are shocked, wait, there are 5 movies? Because a lot of people forget, yeah, 10 years later they made 4 and 5, and we'll talk about that when we get there.
I think the first one is really good. Prophecy 1 is a genuinely good film. 2 is pretty good as well. I can see why people are confused that there's like 5 of them, because really the only one that I feel like had proper release and a lot of like A-list actors and stuff was the first movie. Like, it's kind of considered a cult film, but I do think it's quite good. I very much enjoy the first one.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. The first one was a legit well done movie with Christopher Walken and Virginia Madsen, and had a theatrical run for Miramax. It did moderately well. You know, it wasn't a big blockbuster, but it was enough of a success that they decided to keep it going, and they went direct to video with 2 and 3. And I think people are confused in general because they don't know that there's 5 of them, because 1, 2, and 3 all have the tie-in of Christopher Walken. And then after that, it's 10 years later after the last one, and then it's Kari Wuerr. I love Kari Wuerr, but it's like, oh wait, this is the same franchise as the Christopher Walken one?
So, not really, and I'll explain that when we get to that point.
But that's the whole thing, is that it is a franchise, but, well, I mean, the first 3 is the franchise, and 4 and 5 are part of the franchise, but not really.
Now, we're going to have to talk about the Weinsteins a lot in this. Let's leave the Warthog in the Room out of it, and we'll just talk about them as film producers instead of what the jokes we all want to make about the Warthog in the Room. So originally, the first movie, the initial press release called it God's Army. Then a subsequent press release called it Daemon, D-A-E-M-O-N, and then eventually Prophecy. Because here's the thing, the movie came out in 1995. It was shot and meant for release in 1993. Mm. Scissorhands Weinstein wasn't happy with the edit of the movie, so it sat on the shelf for 2 years while he kept scissoring away at it. And you can even really tell that this was meant to be 1993, not so much for the movie itself, but for the tie-in. Go and watch the Madonna video for Bad Girl, where Christopher Walken plays Gabriel, the angel, stalking her as she's slowly being destroyed by her self-destructive lifestyle. That video came out 2 years before the goddamn movie that it was a tie-in to. So there's a war going on between the angels. Some of the angels feel that God made man as he should have. Some of the angels feel man took away God's love from them, and they hate us. They despise us. And it turns out, when we get a monologue from Satan later, for the last 10,000 years, no soul has been able to enter either heaven or hell due to this war between angels, and they're all just sitting in purgatory, so the war has to come to an end one way or another. This Korean War veteran, Colonel Arnold Hawthorne, turns out to be the most evil soul that has ever existed. Archangel Gabriel, Christopher Walken, wants to use this soul as a way to end the war. I have problems with this, because I really can't see how Colonel Arnold Hawthorne is more evil than Hitler or Stalin or Jeffrey Dahmer or something. I don't understand how this one guy is the most evil soul ever. Angel Simon, on the opposite side, hides the soul in a little Indian girl, so it becomes kind of a chase film, as all the angels are trying to get this soul to use it for their little war, and Christopher Walken is constantly destroying us talking monkeys in the process.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, it's a neat movie. It's well done. A little silly, if you really start to think about it.
Yeah, but, as I was giving that description, it sounds a little not as good as the movie actually is, doesn't it?
Well, there's a lot of movies like that, where as you're watching it, you're like, this is really entertaining and good, and then after it's over, you sit back and you're, wow, I like that. And then you start to think about it, and you're like, wow, that was really dumb. Like, but you still enjoy it for what it is. Like, in the context of the movie itself, it's good, but it is kind of corny. And I do wonder if we ever got like what the original cut was supposed to be, if maybe it would have made things make a little bit more sense. Cause you'd be surprised that, well, not you, but people in general would be surprised. Little scenes here and there that might take something like that and, you know, express it in a way that makes sense. But then you've got a producer or a Weinstein involved who's like, thinks that, well, they're talking too much. Cut that out. Get to the action. People don't care. And then it ends up taking something out that would have explained something. But now, all right, well, now this doesn't make sense.
This movie has a very theatrical feel to it, and I'll come back to that when we get to some of the other movies. It also has scene stealers, because it's got a pretty A-list cast, like Eric Stoltz is the Angel Simon, you've got Virginia Madsen as the human who's kind of caught in the middle of all this, you got Christopher Walken, obviously, you have Amanda Plummer and Adam Goldberg as sort of zombies that Christopher Walken keeps just to do his bidding because he hates humans so much, that people he just will not let die.
Early Viggo Mortensen too, I believe.
The show stealer, even though he only has two scenes, Viggo Mortensen as Lucifer absolutely steals this movie from everybody else. He's only in two scenes and both of them are basically monologues. He just owns this movie.
He's really good in it.
And here's the thing about this one. You can see the money is on the screen. Okay, yes, it sat on the shelf for 2 years, but this feels like it should feel. And I think that comes from director and writer Gregory Wyden. A common criticism of this movie also comes down to Gregory Wyden. This is Highlander with angels. Gregory Wyden is the writer of the original Highlander movie. He's the creator of that franchise. Cause think about it. You have a race of immortals who can't die except by, okay, they can get their heads cut off, but they have to have their hearts taken out. So a very specific way that can kill them. And that's the only way. Otherwise they're immortals. They can sense when another one of them is around. They've been influencing history as they go around. There's a war going on. There's a prize to be won if they kill one another. This is Highlander with angels.
Oh my God, it is.
You didn't notice that? You didn't notice that when you were watching it?
That's hilarious. Well, I never put that together, actually.
I don't know if that was smarter Gregory Wyden saying, hey, I had this hit, let's repeat that, or if that's lazy, him going, yeah, this is all I got.
Maybe column A and column B. Maybe a little bit of both.
He just like would erase McCloud, you know, and put Gabriel in there.
Because I know when I was rewatching these, you know, I noticed Gregory Wyden's name and I'm just like, this is fucking Highlander, man. It's just a religious version of Highlander. But so the first film, it's quite good. It ends not definitively, so there is opening for a sequel. It ends pretty definitively. The film works good on its own. I'm not sure this needed to be a franchise, but I'm also not mad that it was a franchise, if that makes sense.
I started out the episode just basically going into how I did enjoy very much the first movie. I do think it's a cool film. It's slick. It's very well directed. It looks really good. You can definitely see the money on the screen, and you've got some great A-list performances from some real A-list guys. And, you know, early showing of Viggo Mortensen and what he can do. And even though like he is like kind of barely in the movie, the impact that he brings is great. So I do think as a film that just stands on its own, Prophecy is really good. And it's really easy to forget that there are not only a sequel, a third film, but like four other sequels in this franchise. I don't really get why this needed to become a franchise.
Well, I think that has to do with just, like I said, the movie sat on the shelf for 2 years. So when it came out in 1995, it was kind of an unexpected hit. It made not a ton of money. It wasn't a blockbuster, but it made a lot more money than I think Warthog Weinstein thought it was going to. Otherwise, he probably would have released it in 1993 when it was actually shot. Then they decided to make a sequel. Prophecy 2 was also meant to be theatrical. So this one does still feel theatrical, and it's got a lot of A-list actors. You've got Christopher Walken coming back, you've got Russell Wong, you've got Jennifer Beals, Brittany Murphy, Eric Roberts, technically Glenn Danzig for the 18 seconds he's on screen. You got Bruce Abbott now taking over the Thomas Daggett role. You do have in the first three movies, technically in the fourth and fifth movie, Stephen Hinter as Joseph the Coroner, as the only character that's in all five movies. He only appears in 4 and 5 via email, so it's not actually the actor, but the character still has something to do with all five movies, and he's the only one. Prophecy 2 was meant to be theatrical, and you can kind of tell when you watch it. It's got, I'm not trying to be demeaning to direct-to-video, because you guys know I love direct-to-video, but there's a certain feel when a movie is made direct-to-video versus a theatrical film that is dumped direct-to-video, and
especially
that's what
in the
this
90s.
Feels like. Yeah.
Especially back then too, because they were shooting with lenses and stuff that was meant more for the TV screen and not for like a widescreen theatrical release, which is why a lot of like made for TV movies back then and direct to video movies back then weren't like widescreen. You can tell that this was shot for a theater. It has a real nice, crisp, wide look to it. It's a big looking movie, and it looks like it was meant to be in a theater. So I do absolutely get what you're talking about.
So Prophecy 2 came out in 1998, direct to video. I don't know what the behind the scenes was on this one, where the Weinsteins decided, no, we're just going to dump this one to video, because they clearly spent a lot of money on this. Like I said, that cast alone had to have cost quite a bit of money. So this time, at the end of the first movie, Gabriel gets stopped from his war by Satan pulling out his heart, and so he's sentenced into hell, and all the souls can enter heaven and hell, and blah, blah, blah. So this movie, it doesn't really give an explanation, but Satan's had enough of Gabriel's crap and kicks him out of hell, so he's back on Earth now. They don't really explain that part, but Russell Wong is the angel Danielle, and he falls in love with Jennifer Beals' Valerie. He gets her pregnant, and her child now could be the thing, the MacGuffin that could end the Civil War, which is still going on between angels and angels. So this is another chase film where now they have to get the baby or protect the baby, and Eric Roberts is the Archangel Michael. Glenn Danzig shows up as Archangel Samuel 18 seconds, and then he's killed by Russell Wong, and I guarantee you there are deleted scenes of that, because these characters talk to one another in his one scene like they have a long history. And I remember when this movie was in production, all the metal magazines were talking about Danzig co-starring in this, and he's got 18 seconds of screen time. So I guarantee you Danzig had scenes. Maybe it's because he's not an actor. Maybe his line deliveries were terrible. I don't know. Danzig is not really in this movie, but everyone remember. Even when my girlfriend and I were going to rewatch this, she goes, is that the one with Danzig? And I'm like, kinda.
Yeah, you can barely even tell it's him either. He's got this weird, like, demon sort of makeup on.
He's always yelling, and he never wears a shirt.
Actually, he is wearing a shirt in this one, because Danielle rips it when he tears Samuel's heart out.
Well, that's the thing. At some point, he's going to have part of that shirt, you know, ripped.
The shirt is going to be damaged, because
yes.
The natural order of things is that Danzig needs to be shirtless.
Absolutely. I was actually very sad when I went into watching this one, because I had been reading, you know, Rip and all those other metal magazines, and I love Danzig. And so I was like, oh, he's going to get into acting now. And cause he had been doing like, his comic books and stuff. And I was like, oh, he's going to do this. And then yeah, it's like, oh, and he's, oh, there he is. Oh, there he went. Like. And then I'm like, okay, well, he got killed. Maybe they're going to bring him back as, like, super undead Danzig from hell. And no, it just, that was it.
The movie just kind of continues without him.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, hey, here's this guy. He's really, you know, well, short, but he's really beefy. And then he just goes away, and that's the end of that.
He honestly could have been just any one of the nameless angel army that, you know what? Russell Wong actually kills quite a few angels in this movie.
Yeah, it legitimately could have been any just nameless actor extra that they threw in there and killed. Like it didn't need to be. I'm sure whatever they paid him was way more than they would have paid for somebody who normally would have had a role like that. So I do wonder if it's like you said, was it cut because he's just not a good actor, or was it cut because it just, they wanted to kind of move things along and it didn't really add anything to the plot one way or the other. I don't know. It's barely there and that's it.
It's disappointing. It would have been kind of cool to have this, these movies. And around that time, you know, Henry Rollins was doing stuff. I think he eventually went off and did Johnny Mnemonic, the Chase with Charlie Sheen and stuff. It would have been kind of cool to see them sort of going head to head and being in their own little, respective movies doing bit parts and stuff. And we only really got, Prophecy 2 with Danzig, and that kind of sucks.
The movie itself is all right. You know, it's not as good as the first one, for better or worse, but
there's more action though.
There is more action and
jumping from rooftop to rooftop in slow motion.
Well, that's, you know, don't you want that in every movie?
Just absolutely.
You know, I'd watch some Hallmark movies if there was slow motion jumping from roof to roof. It's like good because they've got a solid cast, you know, with Eric Roberts and Christopher Walken again and Russell Wong, who I like, but it definitely feels like a higher scope of direct-to-video movie. So again, it's like, was this supposed to go to the theater and it ended up going direct-to-video? Or it's good. It's a cool movie. I enjoyed it. I thought it was definitely one of the better of the time direct-to-video movies. And I'm not shitting on direct-to-video movies. There are a lot of really good ones, and this is one of them.
It was cool. Like, I feel like it wasn't as good as the first one, but it did have some good, like, action set pieces, and it feel like it still managed to capture, like, the overall vibe of the first movie. Like, it looked like it belongs as a sequel, as a companion to the first movie. So I like it. I've revisited it a few times, and I enjoy it enough.
And there's sort of a running thing, which will even come up later in the third movie. Those zombies I was talking about with, which were Amanda Plummer and Adam Goldberg in the first movie, where he kind of has these zombie, Gabriel has these zombie assistants who he makes do all the stuff he doesn't want to do. Mm. And in this one, it's Brittany Murphy as Izzy, a girl who had just committed suicide. He can only revive the recent dead.
Right.
I don't know if there's a ticking clock or something, but he stumbles upon her. You really feel bad for her because she just wants to die and he won't let her. And I actually, don't you kind of feel bad for her in this, that she just wants to die?
That's a very, it's a good element. It adds a good dramatic sense or a dramatic feel to the film for sure.
It's really a shame. Brittany Murphy never really got the credit that I think that she was due. Like, she did a lot of really good movies. She did small independent films where she was very good. She kind of was getting the larger films that were terrible, and she was good, but they never really took off. Like, I always found her to be a really good actress that just, for me, she should have been like the Reese Witherspoon. Reese Witherspoon, for whatever reason, kind of took off. And I'm not saying that they both couldn't have taken off. It just didn't really hit. And it's a shame. I always liked her. And
yeah.
And then she
kind of just got like delegated to being known as the chick in that Eminem movie, right?
Well, but then there are a couple other things about Prophecy 2 that are kind of interesting, maybe thematically, whether they intended it or not. Because of the fact that Valerie is pregnant, a pregnancy she didn't want, she, you know, is advancing and has made her incredibly important Sarah Connor style, there is this sort of abortion debate going on because she does not want this child. Whereas the angels, I mean, literally God has chosen her. Well, not God, an angel has chosen her to bear a Nephilim against her will. Is there sort of a political abortion, anti-abortion thing there? Or is it just the Weinsteins being like, nah, none of that's there?
I think there probably is. There was more than likely like a pro-life versus pro-choice kind of thing. And this isn't something that was even like new in horror movies either. Like there's a big element to that in the original Black Christmas film as well. So I don't think it's like beyond logic or anything that they were kind of playing to that, especially because politically that was becoming like a bigger thing. Like you had more people coming out being pro-choice, you know, my body, my choice kind of stuff. And then you had the evangelical religious Christian Republican types that are like, no, you can't kill the baby. I don't see how they couldn't have put that in the movie, especially since I think the message in it is pretty clear. Like that is kind of what they were going for.
There's also an element of kind of a rapey vibe with Danielle, because it's not stated, but it's heavily implied, because Valerie, she's not a virgin, but she's very celibate. Mm. It's heavily implied the way he seduces her is he's sort of hypnotizing her because he chose her to bear the Nephilim. So his intent was, I'm going to get this woman pregnant. Mm. Doesn't that kind of add a creepy, rapey vibe to the angels in this?
A little bit. You kind of had that in religion already with, you know, the birth of Jesus is you know, God just kind of yeeted his seed into Mary.
There's also another strange thing, because the first movie was very much like a road kind of movie, and it was very set in the, lots of stuff set in the desert.
Yes.
Lots of stuff set in rundowns. It kind of had a Western sort of feel to it, which when you listen to the soundtrack is very intentional. Mm. That can't be a coincidence, because that it's got a very Western style soundtrack. Whereas Prophecy 2 is very
it
urban.
Is, yeah.
This all takes place in the middle of the city in rundown buildings and industrial parks and has a much harder soundtrack. I actually really like the dichotomy between 1 and 2. This one almost feels cyberpunkish in a way. You tell me the visual style, the lighting, the way everything is wet and there's so much electronics everywhere. This almost has a cyberpunk vibe to the second movie. Or am
totally
I reading
does.
Way too much in?
Yeah, all like the kind of blue, cold kind of lighting. The rundown industrial district of town, while still keeping the same sort of vibe from the first movie, it's just...
All the angels dressed like they're homeless people?
Yes. It's very much still the same sort of vibe as the first movie, but it's in a different setting, but it's like what that setting would look like in the same universe as the first movie. Now we're off to more of like a cold kind of setting as opposed to the Western style hot desert. Now we're sort of more urban, cyberpunk, industrial district, lots of blues, lots of shadows and stuff. It's done really well. It's a great looking film.
Well, this one ends with Archangel Michael, Eric Roberts, punishing Gabriel by making him human at the end. He can no longer hear God. He can die. He's human, and he's now a derelict on the streets of Los Angeles. We get this sort of ominous, the war is still going on, because they keep cutting to these things where when lightning flashes, you can see angels fighting off in the distance in the sky.
Yeah.
The war is still going on. Now, a quick side note about this movie. This movie probably made publicity that the Weinsteins didn't want to make. When Christopher Walken arrived on set, he was carjacked of his Prophecy 2 script, glasses, keys, driver's license, and wallet when he first arrived at the airport.
Oh, God.
So that brought a little unnecessary publicity. There's something that also happened starting with this movie and a couple of the sequels. A lot of the cast, the writers, the directors, also wrote and directed Children of the Corn sequels, which were also owned by Miramax at that point. So I don't know if it's sort of weird how much Children of the Corn people are in these movies. I found that strange when I was doing the research. Like, there's a lot of Children of the Corn people in this.
That is probably one of those rare times when you could actually say that.
Then, this was a pretty modest hit on video, so they made a third film. This one made to go direct to video. Prophecy 3, The Ascent. The first feature film directed by Patrick Lussier, who I really loved in Drive Angry. I loved Drive Angry, but this is his first movie. So now you've got Christopher Walken as Gabriel. Gabriel is the good guy now. Now Vincent Spano as Zophael is the bad guy. And you've got Danielle is back, although he's not played by Russell Wong anymore. You've got a lot of ties to the first movie again. You've got the little Indian girl is back. This one is much more of a redemption arc for Gabriel, because now the child is growing up from the last movie. The child is grown up. Both sides want to use him again as a way to end the war, one way or the other. Gabriel is, he gets his angelic powers back. He still pulls the asshole rising people from the dead against their will, but kind of does it as a good guy now. it's sort of weird, and he's got long scraggly hair, and he's learned humanity because he's been forced to live on the streets of LA, you know, all these years as a bum. So he no longer calls us talking monkeys. Honestly, he has a good redemption arc at the end. This movie should have been the end. That's why it was the end of the franchise for quite a few years, because Gabriel goes through a complete arc in these three movies. The only thing I'll say about this one that came across as pretty weak, because I think the story's all right, it's got good production values. I don't know, probably Scissorhands Weinstein again. I don't know exactly what happened. Tell me if I'm wrong. There are not obvious reshoots in this, because I don't know if Christopher Walken grew his hair out for this movie, or if it was a wig.
Oh, I'd say it was either extensions or a wig.
But you tell me that you can't tell in some scenes where the wig is not fitting properly, and they're all scenes that are just Christopher Walken talking.
Oh, absolutely. There's a bit of a samurai cop vibe there.
Yeah, there is more than one scene where you just go, oh, this just doesn't quite match lighting wise. That, oh, there's a lot of reshoots in this movie too, probably months after the fact. So that doesn't bode well, but I think the movie actually does work in this. I kind of like the fact that this is an ending. This is where it should have ended. Like I said, this is a complete story. If you go through Prophecy 1, 2, and 3, Gabriel has a complete story in this one.
You have a full arc. He gets, you know, he starts off, he's the bad guy, and then he gets his redemption at the end. And it works, because you can actually watch all three of these and feel like you've got a full story. It's probably why they were like, okay, we got a trilogy here, let's stop. And for whatever reason, they decided to continue. It's also slick. I think it's Patrick Lussier is the, how you say the last name? I'm not entirely sure, but regardless, he's done a lot of like really fun, cool movies, and you can see like a lot of his directorial style here. It's very slick. And, very like, you know, I mean, it was 2000, but it was late 90s when he was shooting this, and it has that kind of late 90s look to it. It was cool. I think that the whole, Devil and Angels, you know, war movies, it's not really done as much as they probably should. And a lot of times when it is done, it's done kind of crappy. I think this is, it's done well because even though this was a drop off in budget from the first film.
An obvious drop off in budget.
I still think that they did the best with what they had. Probably the majority of the budget went to Walken to keep him on board. But I mean, you got Brad Dourif on there. Granted, you know, not in a huge...
That is one of my problems. How do you have Brad Dourif and you kill him 10 minutes into the movie?
God.
You had Brad Dourif, people!
they could have done a little bit more with him, but overall, I liked it. I thought it was fun. I thought it was cool. I thought it was a nice ending to the trilogy, and,
It's where it should have ended, for sure. I agree. It has its problems. This one's definitely a little more noticeable that it's a direct-to-video thing, but still not necessarily in a bad way. It's still a good-looking film. It's got a lot of great moments in it. Christopher Walken is still good, even if his wig or extensions are a bit goofy-looking and wrong-looking at times. I do think it's a good finale, and it is definitely where it should have ended.
I also like the fact that it's an actual sequel, that it picks up, even though Jennifer Beals is not coming back, even though Russell Wong is not coming back, their characters are still in this.
Part of the first two.
Right, and a nice little callback to the original movie. There's actually a couple of callbacks to the first movie. Moira Snyder, who played Mary, the little Indian girl that had the evil soul in her in the first movie, she's back in this one as the same character. I liked that. And also in the first movie, Christopher Walken took Amanda Plummer as his zombie to a diner when they were coming out to the desert before they met Satan, before they met Lucifer. Sandra Ellis Lafferly was the waitress. He comes to the same diner in this one, and Lafferty is playing the same waitress, and she recognizes him, and she's like, new girlfriend, huh?
And yeah, that was cool.
It was a nice little callback that didn't feel forced. Yeah. So Prophecy 3, The Ascent was not a bad movie, and it was a good bookend, and it would have just laid there. I don't know why all of a sudden in 2005, someone decided, let's make more Prophecy movies, because I'm telling you right now, they didn't. Because I guarantee you, these movies were, 4 and 5 were Hellraiser. That these were not, isn't it sad that that's a term now? Even more ironic that Doug Bradley is actually in 4, but.
Exactly.
I guarantee you these were not written as Prophecy movies. Okay, they have a reference here or there, or a name drop, but you can tell these are a totally different continuity. These are a totally different backstory. When Satan appears in this, it is definitely not the same character that Viggo Mortensen played as Lucifer in the first movie. You can tell Prophecy Uprising and Prophecy Forsaken were not written as Prophecy movies. These were scripts that Miramax had lying around that they decided, well, just one quick little shine, now they're Prophecy movies. And that's why The one thing I'll give 4 and 5 is they are sequels to one another. Yeah. Kari Wuerr is the same character in both, and 5 follows the events of 4. So fine, I'll give you that. But these are not prophecy movies. These should not have been prophecy 4 and 5. And I think that's their biggest problem. And also, you know, when you Hellraiser a movie, and poor Kari Wuerr, because this happened in Hellraiser 5, I think it was, or it might have been 7, Hellraiser Deader, where... They take poor Kari Wuerr and say, hey, we're going to shoot some direct-to-video sequels that are not written as sequels, and we're going to shoot them in Czechoslovakia.
God, people give shit to the new, like, Halloween movies that are coming out, that it's like, Halloween Kills, Halloween Ends, like, Hellraiser Deader.
Yeah, it's not even a word.
God.
So for both of these, they're directed by Joel Sossian, I think is the name, who directed Children of the Corn Genesis. Oh, like I said, a lot of Children of the Corn people in this. These have a very Eastern European feel. And I know they take place in Eastern Europe, but even right away, you're like, wow, these were not shot in America. Mm-hmm. And you can tell. Oh, yeah. Even though they got a lot of American actors in them, well, Doug Bradley's British, but, you know, a lot of English-speaking actors in them. These movies, I'm not even going to go into the plot because it doesn't really matter.
They're kind of just
other
like,
than the fact that it...
You know, the three original ones were where everything interesting happened, and now you have the leftovers. Kind of all 4 and 5 are, and they're not even... I don't even think they were really even... Like you said, they could have been, like, leftover scripts for something entirely different, or, like, something that was originally going to be Hellraiser, and they were like, hey, we haven't, there hasn't been a prophecy movie in a while. Let's turn these two into them. And isn't it like a trivia thing that they were also shot like back to back or something?
Yeah, they were both shot back to back. They came out a month apart. They were shot by the same director. Kari Wuerr stars in both of them. Same cinematographer, blah, blah, blah. These are cheap.
Oh, yeah.
These are cheap cash-in movies, and I think that's why most people have no clue that, wait, there are 5 prophecy movies? Because these aren't real prophecy. Okay, Tony Todd shows up in 5. Other than that, okay, Doug Bradley, he's not playing Pinhead. He's playing a cop. He's not really a big name. You've got Simon, Eric Stoltz's character from the first movie back in this, but not Eric Stoltz, obviously. Mm. Like I said, even if I didn't tell you these were not written as prophecy movies, you could totally tell when you watched
them. Oh, absolutely.
When you watched these, did you not immediately say to yourself, these just don't feel like they're part of the same franchise?
Oh, definitely. It very much had a similar vibe to like a Claudio Fragasso kind of movie, you know, where you talked about how it's very clearly shot somewhere in like Eastern Europe or somewhere else, but they're using like English speaking American and British speaking actors to kind of be like, they're not going to know the difference, but they absolutely do because of like the kind of wonky translated script from whatever other language to English probably, and the very like European setting, like with very like American looking and sounding actors. Like it can work sometimes and be really fun and kind of interesting, but in the case of Prophecy, it just felt kind of weird. And just having these be sequels or pretending to be sequels to Prophecy, it also goes back to like the Troll movies, how after Troll 2, we somehow got an Ator sequel that ended up getting stuck with a Troll 3 title. And it just has this weird, like, strange, this doesn't actually fit Fragasso sort of element to it.
Well, there's also the fact that I'll give them a slight bit of credit that they are obviously shooting in Eastern Europe. They weren't trying to say, like, oh, look, it's San Francisco or something, that it's actually set in Eastern Europe. So
that.
I give them a little bit of credit for that. In these, there is a book that has been discovered in Eastern Europe where it is the 23rd chapter of the final book of the Bible. Mm. It's basically post-Revelations is what it is, and it's called the Apocalypse. And if this book gets into the hands of renegade angels, they can use it to bring about the Antichrist. So that's what 4 and 5 are about. Again, a little bit of credit's due. 5 is a direct sequel to 4, since these were shot back-to-back. These are one story. And although 5 does end on a giant, giant cliffhanger, and hopefully this is the last prophecy movie we get, but 5 does end on a huge cliffhanger of the Antichrist now is born. is basically where it ends, and I guess the next one would be post-apocalyptic if they do it. Man, it's not a bad idea. Post-apocalyptic prophecy sequel.
Yeah, why not?
You know, have it go all Mad Max, but with angels. I actually, now that I'm saying that out loud, I'm not as against that as
that
I thought I would be.
That would be pretty cool. That sounds kind of like, there's a sort of a movie like that. I think it was called Legion, and it was just Terminator, but with angels.
Yeah.
The only problem with Legion was they cut so much out of it, it made no goddamn sense when it was released.
There's also a movie from a few years back. It was called, had the very unfortunate title, but also hilarious, I'm Not the Devil I'm Not the Devil Mommy? Because we're going back, I'm just thinking of this now, but I believe it was a Spanish film that, you know, they translated to English, and so that kind of, you know, a little lost in the translation.
Oh,
but,
no.
Hold on, let me
a lot cooler in Spanish.
It's I'm Not Jesus Mommy. That's it.
It's, oh my God.
It's basically this woman enters into this like secret cloning thing and they manage, like she wants a baby. So they,
oh, I saw the trailer for this now that you're saying, yes, once you started mentioning the cloning thing, I'm like, shit, I did see the trailer for this.
She clones herself, and that somehow, like, so she keeps the clone of herself as like her child, but he's really the Antichrist.
Oh,
and
dear God.
It's, cause he's born without a soul because it's a clone. So it's amazing. It's just so ridiculous.
Oh,
I watched it because somebody had mentioned it and they were like, I got this movie. Like they got sent like a screener of it. And I'm like, oh my God, I need to see this movie immediately. Just on the title alone. And, I checked it out and I was not disappointed. If you're looking for a good movie, you're not going to find it here. But if you're looking to be entertained with some ridiculousness, you're going to find it here.
Unfortunately, what you won't find is a lot of quality in Prophecy 4.
No!
Because they're very cheaply shot. These were very 2000s direct-to-video. You know, because remember, in the 1990s, direct-to-video, they still had pretty decent-sized budgets. A direct-to-video movie was not a throwaway thing back then. By 2005, this was a throwaway thing. I don't know, they just felt so different that they just... They feel like they're not part of this franchise, and I don't think they should be. Like, even when I picked up, like, a box set with all five movies, and I'm watching it and going, there's only three Prophecy movies on this set, though. There's just two other films.
Well, I mean, that happens all the time. Probably what happened was Miramax probably bought some other company. They absorbed their library. And it was like, hey, we've got these two movies that haven't been released yet. What are they? Oh, they're religious movies. We can make them prophecy sequels. And then they decided to do that.
Okay, with this franchise, most people are aware of the first three movies. It's when I told some friends that we were doing all five movies, that's when a lot of the, wait, there are five? Came up. I mean, even some people in the know, like I was talking to Brandon Tenold and I mentioned it to him and he was like, wait, there's five? A guy who's pretty in the know.
Oh, he's definitely, he's a major cinephile like we are for sure.
And he had no idea that there were five movies in this franchise. Obviously, when it comes to direct-to-video, we don't get numbers. We don't know how well things do, because, you know, sometimes we'll get, like, you know, it sold X amount of units, but by the 2000s, we didn't get those numbers. I'm going to wager that since most people don't even know that these movies exist, I'm going to say that Prophecy 4 and 5 didn't do so hot.
Probably not.
Or there would have been another one.
It may have had a good, like, international market, possibly. Like, it may have sold well in Europe, but pretty much everything sells well over there. But I don't think it got a very good, it probably didn't do very well domestically, and that's both, like, Canada and America, because most people here don't know that there are five Prophecy movies. Most people don't even know that there's three. They think there's just only, like, two.
So to round this out, since this is a religious franchise and this was meant to be our Christmas episode, where does this franchise stack up? Because I look at it as it's got three good movies that have a complete arc in it. As an atheist, I wasn't offended at any of the religious stuff and the war between angels and that. I have seen on some religious movie review sites, they call these movies blasphemous.
Oh, they call everything blasphemous.
I would, Well, I would actually love to hear from religious listeners whether these movies are blasphemous or just an exploitation take, you know, using angels. Because go back to Gregory Wyden's original movie. This could have just been Immortals. This is kind of a not Highlander franchise in a way.
And even Highlander itself has religious connotations to it, like how churches are holy ground and they can't fight there and stuff. So I think even in his writings back then, he had like a religious sort of, not necessarily religiously motivated himself, but religiously motivated to like add stuff like that into the script, like kind of, I guess, Jesus-y kind of stuff.
Overall, I mean, 1, 2, and 3 are good. 4 and 5, they're not terrible. I could think of plenty of other things you could watch that would be infinitely more painful. And I mean, I'm agnostic now I grew up Irish Catholic, but I'm more agnostic now. And I've never, even when I was religious to a certain degree because of my upbringing, I never really found any offense in that. It's like entertainment. It's a different thing. You know, you're watching something and it's not being sacrilegious. Now, I do think there are certain things where they are, you know, intentionally trying to rile people up by being
yes.
sacrilegious, but I don't think that was the intention here. I think they just wanted to tell a story and they were using, you know, a religious avenue for it. And there's nothing
yes.
wrong with that.
I also think, and this does go back to the problem with 4 and 5 being from 2005, the first three movies, okay, 3 actually came out in 2000, but they all are all very late 90s movies. And I don't mean that in a negative connotation. They're all very late 90s movies. 4 and 5 really feel 2000s. They feel post Scream. That they are kind of self-aware. They have that sort of Saw washed out look to them, which I guess, how often have we seen that when something is shot in Eastern Europe? Well, it's gotta be all gray and washed out. Cause yeah, that's what Eastern Europe actually looks like, right?
They want you to think that's what it looks like so you don't move there.
I'm just getting sick of that look every time an action movie starts with the villain being trained in Eastern Europe. It's that washed out. I don't know why Eastern Europe has to look like that in movies. It's a weird trope that bothers me.
It has to look all ominous and over there it's evil. And this guy's being trained in the evil ways of Eastern Europe. And it's all gray and washed out. It's even worse when that's what the entire movie looks like. And this isn't even like something that was shot in Bulgaria. This is a Hollywood motion picture. Is that new Pet Sematary movie just looked like shit. Completely gray, just awful. I couldn't get into it. I couldn't get 30 minutes into it,
which is one of the things that the first three Prophecy movies, they look, they have a lot of brightness.
They're
to
really
them,
lush,
you know? Like
lots of nice shadow and contrast. It's great.
Well, and 1 and 3 taking place in the desert, you have those deep oranges, and you have reds as the sun is going down, and the second movie, like we said, is a more cyberpunky, cold, sort of Terminator, James Cameron-y kind of look, but it's still got great lighting. 4 and 5 just look gray.
Yes.
They look dull. They look boring. Even if the scripts were better, these look boring.
They look very
visually
generic,
uninteresting. They're so visually uninteresting looking. These are kind of like the Silent Night, Deadly Night 4 and 5. Remember how, strangely enough, those were sequels to each other but not the other movies? You've got to stop doing this. You've got to stop just tacking on sequels. I know they don't do it as often anymore, but it still happens. I really would recommend the Prophecy franchise if it were 1, 2, and 3. The franchise as a whole. I can't recommend it as a whole because 4 and 5, they fucking suck.
Well, recommend 1, 2, and 3 then.
Well, yeah.
Then go watch Prophecy 1, 2, and 3. Like I said, it's a complete arc. You got Walken really Walkening up the hell out of it.
Oh, yeah.
And also,
it's kind
like
of,
I said,
not to interrupt you, but like it sort of shows an interesting evolution of Walken in general, because he's a lot more understated in the first one and even a little bit in the second one, but then he started getting a little more over the top. And in 3, he's pretty much the Walken we know and love today. Like, Walken in the first movie is a bit more like Deer Hunter Walker, or Walken. And then he gradually becomes sort of meme Walken.
Well, he was human by that
yes.
point. He was, you know, living on
Makes
the streets
sense.
And eating out of trash cans. So that's what his sentence from Eric Roberts was.
He didn't take getting carjacked very well.
But then you also have this thing about the war between heaven and hell that we can't see, I find really interesting.
Yeah, that's really
cool.
And
I'm coming at this from an atheist. You know, again, the Highlander sort of thing. There's a war between immortals that's happening just outside of your vision, just outside of your line of sight. I think that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Would you recommend the franchise as a whole?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think the first three are the most relevant ones. Well, not necessarily relevant, but they're actual prophecy films, whereas 4 and 5 were, I don't even know if you could call it a cash-in, because how are you going to cash in on prophecy? It didn't do amazingly well to begin with. If you're curious and you want to prove us wrong or whatever, or you really want to see how much they don't fit, or, you know, just check them out for yourself and get your own opinion, I would recommend all 5. Like, why not? Be a completist. Watch them all.
1, 2, and 3, definitely the best. 4 and 5, hey man, you know, it's got Carrie Wurr in it. You could do a lot worse.
Well, and then also you need to go look up the Madonna music video for Bad Girl, because, like I said, it's not technically playing Gabriel. Christopher Walken is basically playing Gabriel in that 2 years before the f***ing film would actually come out. Thank you, Scissorhands Weinstein.
Oh my god.
So, since this was meant as our Christmas episode, Merry New Year to everyone!
Merry New Year!
Where can people find Cecil and wish him Merry New Year?
You can find me having a Merry New Year over at goodbadflix.com, as well as GoodBadFlix on Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. Of course, how could I forget YouTube? And 1201beyond.com.
Where can we find Peter, who I guess hasn't celebrated Christmas yet because he's got that weird Serbian thing going on?
You can find me paying tribute to everybody's holiday. You know, have a happy holiday, have a Merry Christmas, have a Happy New Year, have a crazy Kwanzaa, have a happy Serbian in January Christmas. All of them are great, as long as you're all having a good time with your family or whatever. I don't know. Celebrate whatever you want to celebrate. On Twitter, at Cinematica, Facebook, The Cinemasticus, YouTube, The Cinemasticus, 1201beyond.com. Another fine programming on Patreon, at Zinematica.
And you can find me at 1201beyond.com. You can contact this show at 1201beyond@gmail.com. We also have a Patreon, which, if you wanted to, we really could use the help. There's the Nord code and the Adam and Eve code. So, guys, go watch the prophecy movies. And I would say watch all 5. Tell me if I'm wrong about 4 and 5. Maybe you really dig them. I did not. Keep one foot in the gutter, one fist in the gold. Have a good night.
Blackest of the black, dark of the night, come to me, my bleeding light. See, she comes now, enter oblivion. Hey, she is part of a light in my arms. Hey, she here in 12 with love, oh, clean she has. And she comes down to me, yeah. And she offers me sleep under her black, under her black wing. come, blacker than pitch. Have to make this falling bitch. All I want, all I crave, demon is called. Our bitches come for those who wait, cause preaching hell. Say she is bedeviled with breath enchantment. Holy! And she calls down to me, hell. And she offers to sleep on the halfway.
Radiodrome is a 1201 Beyond production. Find it and other great content at 1201beyond.com.